Shosrei Alexim, Shosrei Turetsky, thank you for those very kind exaggerations. It is incredible to be here. It's really, really an incredible treat to be here. Just to be in this Beis Medrash brings back so many warm memories, to look around the room and to see so many smiling, happy faces. Chadashim v'gam yishanim. Many of you I met tonight for the first time, and I will ask you again for your name, because as I told you, I'm bad with names. And Baruch Hashem, many, many familiar faces from different places, from New York, from New Jersey, from Beit Meir, and many fellows who I look forward to getting to know in the future. Mirtz Hashem. As Asher Yeshir Po, V'Asher Inenu Po, want to be Makdish the Divrei Torah tonight. This is the first time that I'm here in 2 years. I mentioned to Merlana and Arya Morris earlier this evening on the way here that the last time I was in this Beis Medrash, last time I had the chance to talk with fellows and to think together and to share Divrei Torah together, Dani Morris was in my shir. I had left that chevra to come to Eretz Yisrael, to come back. So I definitely want to dedicate the learning tonight Le'ili Nishmas Talmidi HaYakar Nachum Daniel Ben Arya Tzvi. And I want to have a chance to talk with all of you. All you chaim kulchem ayom. To think together, and maybe the yeshiva is learning Maseches Ksubas, perhaps to draw some divrei machshava, divrei hadracha, maybe something that someone will find useful from learning Gemara, from learning halacha, from the lundus of Ksubas Daf Tes Amud Aleph. That's a part of our Masorah. Harar Masorah from Mibes Brisk, and from the Rav in particular, that one of the truest, most authentic sources of Jewish living, of Jewish thought, of Jewish philosophy, of Machshava, is the philosophy of Halacha. To learn a sugya deeply, and then to take a step back, after you work in the Pratim, take a step back and ask yourself, what does the big picture tell you? So I want to begin with a simcha. We'll begin with a simcha. A double simcha. Fellow gets married, a Kohen. Kohen gets married, she'll be zochah to get married at the right time, to the right person, Mirtz Hashem. Each of you should enjoy many, many healthy decades of married bliss. And Kohen gets married, and the Shatova, they're expecting. Eishes Kohen Muberes. So a woman's married to Kohen, so she's carrying in utero a young, yet to be born, Kohen or Kohenes. So the poskim have a discussion in Or Chaim in Yerodea. So what's the status in terms of Tumas Kohanim? So you know from Parshas Amor, a Kohen is Aser to Mitame Lameis. That's only true for male Kohanim, not for female Kohanos. Neither Eishes Kohen nor a Bas Kohen is bound by the rules of Tumas Kohanim. It's only an issue for male Kohanim. So typically an Eishes Kohen has no restrictions in terms of Tumas Kohanim. But the question is, how about if she's an Eishes Kohen Muberes? So you don't know whether she's carrying a male fetus or a female fetus. So female fetus is no issue. A male fetus. So what's the story with Tumas Kohanim? So there's a machlokas aposkim that at the time had no nafkamina, but Zmanazer does have nafkamina. One of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, one of the late Ashkenazi Rishon, the Rokeach, explained why he thought it was mutter. And his explanation is quoted by some of the classical Nosa Kalim on the side of Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, the Shachan, and they raise the possibility, maybe there's another solution. Everyone agrees that Eishes Kohen Muberes is not bound by Tumas Kohanim, but the question is why, and will come soon to Ksubas Daf Tes. So the classic answer that the Rakech gives is he says it's Sfek Sveka. He says it's Safik Zachar, Safik Nekeva. If it's Nekeva, it's not an issue. Even if it's a Zachar, there's a Miat Nephalim. A minority of fetuses are not viable and therefore are not bound by Tumas Kohanim. He says, Safek Zachar, Safek Nekeva, plus the Miat, there's a Svek Sveka, and there's no concern of Tumas Kohanim. And then the Nosa Kelim, Magen Avraham the Shach, quote the Rokech, and they say they have a better solution. Why do you have to get involved in the issues of a double suffix, a svek sveka? They explain why, based on the principles of a tumah v'tahara, a fetus cannot become tameh, so the whole issue doesn't even get off the ground. There's a lot to say about this, and now is not the time to talk about. There's a lot to say about the lumdus of Tumas Kohanim, which we're not going to talk about. You can begin to think over the course of some other time, of course, the Shabbos. You can ask yourself, the Rokeach and the Achronim both agree to the Maskana, the Eishes Kohen Muberes is Mutter Be'ol Ameis, at that time. But should sonograms, should modern technology change things? A lot to talk about, but I just want to zero in for now on one element. On one element, and that takes us first to the Amud that many of you are on right now, Ksivas Daf Tes, in the world of Taurus HaSfekas, number one, and then perhaps we'll see where that takes us, Ba'olam HaMachshava. Because Tosus and Ksivas, the Tosus, and the only the Tosus, maybe there's more than one the Tosus and Ksivas Daf Tes and Ralph. So Tosfos makes the point that when you have a Svek Sveka, it's true that Svek Sveka Lekula, it's true that Suffolk Daraisa is Lechumra, but if it's a double Suffolk, then Svek Sveka is Lekula. But Tosfos says that's only when they're both even Svekas. But you can't add a Suffolk and a Miat. And the Shem Shmaitzah says, I don't understand. The Ksos's Sefer on the world of Taras HaSveka says, I don't understand. It's directly against Rokeach. The Rokeach said, Suffolk Zachar, it's a Svek Sveka. Why? Because you have a Suffolk plus a Miat. Suffolk Zachar, Suffolk Nekeva, that's one Suffolk. And Miat Nephalim. Baruch Hashem, the vast majority of births are viable births. So the Rokeach says we do add a regular Suffolk and a Miat. So how can, whereas Tosis seems to say that you cannot. So you could have said it's a Machlok, okay, it's Machlok Rishonim. Tosis and Ksubas has one Shita, and the Rokeach has a different Shita. But the Ksos and the Shev Shmaitza takes a different route. He develops the following concept. Perhaps you already come across it. Perhaps you'll come across it soon. It's a concept worth understanding on multiple levels. The Ktso says, you have to understand that there are two, when we say Suffolk, Suffolk comes in one of two flavors. When I say I have an even Suffolk, what do you mean by an even Suffolk? So he says, your classic Svek Sveka, you don't know whether the person came from here, the person came from there, all the different cases of Suffolk that you have. A classic Suffolk is not 50-50. Maybe when you're sort of speaking about Lucy, you say, oh, it's a 50-50 Suffolk. But usually the Sveikas you've been dealing with in Ksubas, they're not saying 50-50. We have no idea. Say, I don't know. Whether the person from here, the person from the outside, I don't know. Maybe. I have no numbers. There's a wide open Suffolk. What the Ksos calls a Suffolk Hashako. Just an indeterminate Suffolk. I don't know. The type of suffix the Rokeach is talking about, the Eishes Kohen, that's, we have real numbers attached to it. Suffix Zachar, Suffix Nekeva is pretty close to 50-50. It's a real statistical, numerical suffix. So those are two very different types of Svekas. And for two very different types of Svek Sveka. When we talk about, when the Rokeach says that, yeah, you can add a suffix plus a miut and that works, yeah, because he means 50-50 Zachar Nekeva, that's one. And then out of the 50, you can shave off another 5% because of Nefam. Now you're down to 45. So it's a Miat. The numbers work. The numbers work. So if everything is numerical, so you can have a 50-50 numerical suffix, add a Miat, and that adds up together to give you a Miat, a Rov Lahakal, a Miat Lahachmer. So in that sense, Rokeach calls it Svek Sveka. It doesn't really mean classical Svek Sveka. It means you can add the numbers and you end up getting a Rov Lahakal. Schmeitzer says, but what Tos is talking about, what you're learning about Ksubas Daf Tes is a classic type of Suffolk, an open-ended Suffolk, a Suffolk Hashakal. I have no idea. It's indeterminate. I couldn't attach numbers to it. I just don't know. So if you have two of those Svekas, two I just don't knows, so Svek Sveka is Lahakal. But you can't add an I don't know with a miut. Who says that I don't know is 50-50? Maybe it's 75-25. Maybe it's 25-75. Those are two very different types of things. And that's what Schmeitzer explains. There is no machlokas between Tosis on the one hand and the Rokeach on the other hand. Again, Tosis who says you cannot add a suffix and a miut to get a Svek Sveka. The Rokeach says, yes, you can add a suffix and a miut to get a Svek Sveka. The answer is that two different types of suffix. There's the numerical suffix that can work together with the miut, and they'll knock you down to rov lahakol miut lahachmer, and you're good and you're safe. Versus the classical suffix hashakol, the open-ended suffix is incommensurate. It doesn't blend together with the miut. To get a svek svekum, to get a classical Sveka Tosto, right, you need to have two Sveka Shkulim. And even, you may have come across the Ritva, has the famous Nusach that the Svek Sveka is Mutter Mitam Rov, but he doesn't mean Rov in a numerical sense, he means Rov Tzedad. It means you made a chart of all the possibilities, three possibilities, Lahakel, one possibility, Lahakel. That's not probability, I have no idea what numbers to attach to any of them. Now that concept, Ad Kan, a taste of the world of Torah Sasvek as you're dealing with in Morning Seder. And I want to now begin to ask ourselves what this means b'chayim. What this means b'chayim. So I've had the chance to learn with many of you in various contexts and in different Batei Medrash, in different sides of the Hudson River, different sides of the Atlantic Ocean. We've often come across in many different Masechtos some taste of the world of Torah Sasvekas. Baruch Hashem Iksubis, you're very much involved in that. Iksubis, you're very much involved in that. In the first parak, and perhaps even more, you get to the second parak. The second parak of Iksubis is an absolute smorgasbord of the world of Torah Sasvekas. They line up so neatly. Rov and Chazaka and Migo and Edim and Shtar, it's all there, laid out, Kushal Chanarach. But it comes up all over Shas because it is a part of every part of halacha, and it is a part of life. Halacha, 95% of halacha is dedicated to specific dinim, specific flavors, specific mitzvahs. What are the dinim of nezek? And what are the dinim of marriage? And what are the dinim of Shabbos? What are the dinim of brachas? That's 95% of halacha. But then the other 5% of halacha that deals with how you put all the pieces together, and part of that is Torah Sasvekas. Here are the facts, and that's the din, but what do I do when I don't know? What do I do when I don't know what the facts are? That's where Torah Sasekas comes in. That's where Rov and Chazaka and Migo and Shtar and Edim, the halacha has plenty to say about how do we deal with a lack of knowledge. Halachic epistemology. How do we deal with what we know and what we don't know? That's true in terms of Shmiras Halacha, and that's true in terms of Bichlal, how we live life. Because you think about the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us in the halacha tools to deal with lack of knowledge, tools to deal with suffix, tools to deal with what we do when we don't know. And the halacha tells us you don't freeze just because you don't have all the answers. You don't get paralyzed just because you don't know everything yet. We're able to grapple with, we're able to live life effectively even when we don't yet know everything. Even not everything yet has been determined. Some of you have already come across the fact, Reb Shimon Shkop's idea, that sometimes the way we deal with the suffix, with not knowing, whether it's in the Beis HaMedrash, or in Psak Halacha, or in life decisions, sometimes the way you deal with suffix is your mevar of the suffix. Sometimes you can figure it out. I don't know what the facts are, and I'll figure it out. I'll do research, and I'll get data, and I'll figure out what the facts are. Sometimes your mevar of the suffix. As Reb Shimon Shkop points out in Shar Beis, talking about the Mishnah Shnei Shvilin, he says, not every time, not every tool is about answering the question. Sometimes you embrace suffix. That's what Shimon says about Chazaka de Meikar. Chazaka doesn't tell you what the facts are. Just because that's the way it was yesterday doesn't mean that's the way it is today. Sometimes we embrace the fact, I don't know what the facts are, and here's how I'm going to deal with it. A hanhaga, not a beer. Sometimes we don't know what the facts are, but we figure how to move forward, embrace suffix. And how do we live with suffix? And the truth is coming back to this concept of the ktzos, now looking at it sort of more broadly, is it's important to realize that there are some svekas that you can attach numbers to, there are some svekas that you can set odds on, and there's some svekas that are just open svekas. I just don't know what's coming out of the pike. I can't even tell you 50-50, 75-25, I don't know. I don't yet know. And that's what the Ktzo says in Shem Shmaitza lies at the core of the Amud that you're on. One of the Yesodos of Tes Samad Aleph is there's something called a Suffolk Hashachar. There's something called a Suffolk that I can't even attach numbers to. I just don't know. It's an indeterminate Suffolk. And that, as a matter of fact, isn't just out there. That's classic Suffolk. That's what we said before from the Ktzo. So when we talk about, everyone's heard the Sugya of Svek Sveka, classic Suffolk is Suffolk Hashachar. Classic Suffolk is, I don't know, and I don't... I'm not even sure how to attach numbers to it. I just recognize that I have a lack of idea. And that's the end of the story. And then we'll figure out, period, I don't know, and we'll figure out, halacha will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he has confidence that we can deal with that. And I'm sure I'm not the first person or the 10th person or the 100th person to share with you that that's probably one of the, when you think of a likhe corona, it's one of the lessons moving forward from the whole parsha of corona has gone through various phases, and we're in or out, it's more, it's less, it comes back. I think one of the overwhelming messages whenever one goes through a parasha in life, one needs to ask oneself, what's the Kadosh Baruch Hu telling me? What's the Kadosh Baruch Hu telling us? All the more so something that's so mizazeya and so bizarre and entirely out of our experience, Kadosh Baruch Hu must be telling us an awful lot. One of the most obvious lessons, no doubt there are many, many, many subtle, sophisticated lessons. One of the most obvious lessons, I think, is that, you know, it has to be, to borrow the language of Maseil Sishar in the beginning of Parak Aleph, there has to be nisbar v'nisamitz to us that we don't know what will be. So we always sort of believe that, like in our heads. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch is in charge. But l'maisa, we always operate as though, yeah, but we had it all taped out. You knew what... In eighth grade, you knew what high school you're going to go to in order to get into this yeshiva, in order to get into this medical school, or to retire this retirement home. And like, you know, your whole life is all taped out, planned out. You know exactly what it's going to be. Okay, we knew sometimes things went awry. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminded us, among other things, that we don't really know for sure what's happening next. And again, going back to that niv, that turn of phrase that with which Ramchal opens Perek Aleph Maseil Sharm has to be Shizbarer v'yis ames, should be bar and emes, which I think probably means it should be mentally, cognitively, intellectually clear to us. But more than just I know in my head, that to be mis ames probably means that it's real to me. That I feel it in my kishkas, and that's one of the yesodos, is that it should be not only bar but emes to us that we talk I don't know. We talk, I don't know, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. He really is in charge. And then we can embrace that. The Chazanish writes something very powerful. The Chazanish is famous in terms of Svarim, it's famous in many things, but in terms of Svarim, he's famous for the big Svarim that are Kimat on all of Shas. He writes on just about every single Masechta. The last Perek of Yuma, I think, he doesn't write on, but Kimat everything. Even look at the titles on the 7-volume set, it's Archaim, Yerodea, Choshen Mishpat, Evin Ezer, Zroim, Kachim, Taras. Hakol, Bakol, Mikol. Everything in the world of Halacha, and Lamdas, and Gemara, and Mishnayis, it's all there. See, he's famous for that, but the end, originally publishes at the end of Taras, and now published as a skinny separate sefer, Emunah B'Tachon, 5.5 prakim of the Chazanish's remarkably poetic writing on different Yanei Hashkaf and Musar. And it's all beautiful. I particularly recommend the second parak, which is the shortest, one of the most readable, and exceptionally potent. The second parak is about Bitachon. And he makes the opening point, it's kedai to learn all 7 or so pages, but his opening point is as follows. He says, you know, there's an urban legend around there. There's a Baba Maisa that goes around. The definition of bitachon is that I have to believe, b'emunah shleima, that things will work out exactly the way I expect them. I know the good option will happen. Right, and literally, you've heard this from, maybe you've heard this from our Babas, or from the Baba's Baba, you have to have bitachon that X will happen. You're not sure what's going to happen with the medical test, not sure what's going to happen with an exam, you're not sure what's going to happen, get into the yeshiva I want to, you know, go out with a girl I want to, get into the graduate program I want to, whatever it is, I have to have bitachon that the option that I'm hoping for will happen. So Chazanish points out, number one, if that's your bitachon, it's false. That's a bad, that's a poor religion. It's a false religion because, as we know, we often don't get into the camp you want to, the graduate program you want to, things don't work out the way we had anticipated. And he's like, and why should that be Judaism? He said, no Navi told you that that's what's going to happen. So you want it to happen. Okay. He said, Mehechatesi. Why would I assume that Bitacha means I have to believe that life will play out exactly the way I expect it to? And it doesn't often play out the way I expect it to. Then the Chaznish says something fascinating. He says, of course there's something called Bitachan. He said, Bitachan is one of the foundations of rich, sophisticated, profound, spiritual Avodas Hashem. He says, you know what Bitachan really means? It means something far more beautiful and something real. And something far more reasonable and sensible. Not that Bitachan doesn't mean that I believe Emunah Hashem that whatever I want to happen is going to happen. Why should that be true? He says, Bitachan, what Bitachan does mean is that I believe that life is not random. Life is not just stochastic chaos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is managing the world. And that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to happen will happen. So that makes a lot of sense. That ought to be true. And the truth is, he intimates that it's also actually, once you begin to be misboning, it's much more deeply calming and satisfying. Because it means there's someone far wiser than I, infinitely wiser than I, who's ultimately calling the shots on my life. I don't get what I would have picked to be what's best for me. I'll get what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with his infinite wisdom, chose for me. The truth is, that's a lot more calming once you begin to think about it maturely. And the Chaznish points out, that is Emuna. And over the course of the parak, which I encourage you to learn, he unpacks 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different nafkaminas in this sort of understanding. What does it mean to live with this? He says emuna is the abstract belief and bitachon is that belief applied to life. He talks about the way it impacts how I handle things emotionally, my practical responses, physical responses, spiritual responses, how I strategize about things. It has to do with my self-control in my avos Hashem, how I deal with yitzir hara. That's bitachon. Applying this sort of real, nuanced emuna to life, living this sort of emuna, and that allows us, as the Chaznish points out on the second page, it allows a person to calmly, rationally, with open eyes, embrace uncertain futures. Right? I don't know what's coming out the pipe. I'm not sure how things are going to play out. And we all have that all the time in little ways, and every once in a while in big ways. You're able bitachon, real bitachon. Substantive bitachon gives a person the capacity, which we all need constantly, to be able to embrace suffix and say, okay, I'm not sure what's going to be. Okay, we'll see what happens. I will take reasonable steps. I'm going to plan. I'm going to strategize. I'm going to do reasonable things. And then I'll carry on happily, knowing that I'm walking with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how you live the Shev Shmaitza. That's how you live Taras HaSveikas. That's how you live Erb Shimon. That's how you live the fact that, of course, Halacha tells us at its core, the underlying message of the second parak of Ksubas Dav Tes, the underlying message of the whole Sefer Shev Shmaitza and Shar Yosher is that there is a Torah Sasfekas. The Jew can and will live with Safek, operate well, with incredible productivity and simcha. In a world of Safik, sometimes you're Mavar of the Safik, but sometimes you're not Mavar of the Safik. Sometimes you can, and sometimes you have a Hanaga. How do I embrace Safik that I'm not going to solve and move forward in happy, productive ways? With the recognition, as we said before, that classic Safik is Safik HaShakal. Classic Safik is Safik I'm not able to Mashiach. And I'm not, as much as I would like to mathematize everything, I can't mathematize everything. I can't always put numbers on everything. That's fine. I look at each case, situation as it comes. Can I be a devourer? Can I be a devourer? Can I at least get some numbers? I can get some numbers. And then you figure out how to be mitmodate with a particular situation. I want to close and hopefully wrap this together with a comment that I heard B'Shem Rabbi Willig from one of his sons. Rabbi Turetsky mentioned N.C. Sarkolo and old memories of N.C. Sarkolo. So my oldest memory of N.C. Sarkolo is pre-Beit Meir. It's the summer of 2000, which was the last summer in Efrat. It was I mentioned to one of the chevra earlier this evening. Now I reconnected that summer that I know in Königsberg, Shlita. We had been together at Shechter Shir in the mid 90s, and then he went back to Eretz Yisrael, and then we reconnected the summer of 2000 in Efrat. And I have distinct memories of Rabbi Avram Willig Shlita standing on a table, maybe on a chair on a table, on a Friday night at a Tish, and he shared the following insight b'shem his father, Mordechai Willig Shlita. And he says, I remember the way he describes it. You imagine, like, your father calls you, uncle calls you, your mother calls you, stepmother, whoever it is, someone you love calls you, and you pick up the phone, and hi, Avram. So, yeah, it's me. I need your help with something. Sure, how can I help you? And the line goes dead. Okay? Call got dropped. Bad reception. So, okay. 2 minutes later, phone rings again, and again. How are you? Great. I need to help. Sure, I'd be glad to help. And again, gone. And again, and again, and again. Every time I need your help, I'm glad to help. And you never hear what it is. What's the request? What's the content of the request? It's a frustrating type of situation. And yet, we do that Takadun Baruch Hu, l'chora, every time we say hal. Ana Hashem, ki ani avdecha. Ani avdecha ben amasecha b'tachta moseira. Putting aside the famous Gera Meisim about that pasuk. But there's something odd about that pasuk. Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Aslicha, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me. Please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me success. Kel Narifan Allah, Moshe Rabbeinu Davin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please heal my sister. Please, I'm content. But Ana Hashem, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please what? There's something missing. Ana Hashem, and why? Because I'm your Evet. So that's why you should take my request seriously. But what's the request? It reads like that. The call that keeps getting dropped. What are we asking for? So Avram Willig quoted from his father that he thought that the two Ana Hashems go together, because sometimes we feel like we know what we need. Often we daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hopefully we daven earnestly. We work over time, over the course of months and years and decades of growing in the authenticity of our communing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And sometimes we're talking about specific things. Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. And sometimes we daven and we don't even know what it is we're davening for. And we can say that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we can turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, no, this is a confusing situation. I'm not sure what I want. Ana Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm saying please, and Rebbe Shalom, it's a blank check. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you fill in the blanks. You tell me, I'm just asking you to carry me, to hold me, to help me out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you fill it in. And those are both valid types of tefillah. That's where they both appear in those prakim of tefillah. Ana Hashem, here's what I'd like. Here's what I'm asking you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for. And Ana Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you fill it in. And that's the way a Jew davens. And that's the way a Jew connects. Because sometimes there's a suffix that I can be mishair, and sometimes there's a suffix hashakal. It's true in halacha because it's true in life. It's true in life because it's true in halacha. And let's end where we began. This hopefully, over the last couple of minutes, hopefully we accomplished two things. Hopefully this gave us a chance to think together about how we deal with particular challenges and how we see them as growth opportunities, and how we can grapple effectively and happily and productively with the sveikas that are a part of living olam hazeh. And beyond that, hopefully this is also an exercise in appreciating the way in which halacha and lamdas on the one hand and machshava and hashkafa on the other hand are meant to be coherently, holistically connected. What you learn in the Beis Medrash, you said before, you take a step back and you ask yourself, what does this mean? And what are the messages that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me? Ramban writes in his Yigeres Ramban, Kasher Taku Menasefer, when you get up from learning, the life advice he wrote to say his son, I believe it was his son, Rabbi Nachman, Rabbeinu Nachman Ben Ramban, Kasher Taku Menasefer, when you get up from, you put aside the sefer, when you get up from learning, ask yourself, what can I put, of what I just learned, what can I put into practice? Sometimes it'll be in the details of halachic practice, and sometimes it'll be in the messages and the values, the attitudes, the midos that the halacha shapes, that the halacha enables me to mold myself in that way, in a way that I can then take the values of halacha and live them for Rabbosai. Should continue to have incredible hatzlacha here, incredible hatzlacha in future yeshivas, incredible hatzlacha in life. Hatzlacha rabba. Thank you. Thank you so much.